Welcome to the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. Each episode, the CREXI team dives into a broad range of topics to investigate trends, educate listeners, and understand the latest industry news. As the nation's fastest growing online CRE platform, we're excited to provide a window into the inner workings of commercial real estate for this generation and the next. Welcome, and thank you all for joining us for this episode of the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. In this show, we cover a broad range of topics that cater to newcomers of CRE and industry leaders alike. I'm your host, Ashley Kobovich, Regional Director at CREXI. And today, we are thrilled to sit down with Ron Cohen, Chief Sales Officer at Bessin Partners. Before we dive in, a little bit about our guest. Ron runs the investment sales brokerage at Bessin Partners and is responsible for revenue, business development, and talent management. He joined Bessin Partners in 2003 as an investment sales associate and has brokered sales transactions in Manhattan, Brooklyn, and the Bronx. In 2008, Ron added the role of chief marketing officer and was also charged with working with the sales team to grow the number of exclusive assignments. In 2016, he was appointed chief sales officer to fully focus on growing revenue and leading the sales team. He holds a broker's license in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Before entering commercial real estate, Ron spent a decade as an account management professional in advertising. As vice president slash the group account director at DeMarcy, Macias, Benton & Bowles, DMB&B, he partnered closely with Fortune 100 clients such as Procter & Gamble, Kraft Foods, and Philips Electronics to develop marketing strategies and implement multi-million dollar ad campaigns for well-known consumer brands such as Crest and Norelco. Ron is an active member of the New York real estate community and has held various leadership roles. He is a member of Israel Bond's Real Estate Division and is a former chairman of the Young Mortgage Bankers Association, YMBA. In addition to participating on the St. Jude Spirit of Hope Committee, Ron supports charitable causes, including the Food Bank of New York, UNICEF, and Covenant House. He is a native New Yorker who graduated from the State University of New York at Oneonta and holds an MBA in marketing slash international business from Fordham University Gabelli Graduate School of Business. Ron, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure to be here. We are so excited to have you here. I know our listeners want us to dive in. So I know we just covered an extensive background about you, but we'd like to hear it from you yourself. So give us a little bit of how you got started into your career path, some lessons you learned along the way. So what drew you to your current focus?
Sure. Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here. And, you know, as you indicated, commercial real estate is really a second career for me. I had started out in the advertising agency business, I guess aspiring to be another modern day Don Draper. And I was passionate about the business, certainly, and spent almost 10 years doing television commercials for big brands like Crest, Norelco, Post Cereals, and what have you. And really, just as a native New Yorker, reading the Sunday real estate section of the New York Times every Sunday, and oogling over, you know, buildings and architecture, walking around New York City, I became enamored with real estate and decided that I had to get in the game and I wanted to sell buildings. So I made the pivot.
I love to hear that. So it just took a little bit of reading the newspaper and it enticed you enough to come. And the real estate industry is lucky to have you. So from your early days or in commercial real estate, who were some of your mentors or industry folks that you admire? And then how did they shape your career path?
Sure. Well, certainly having mentors and you know, people to help you and coach you along the way is critical in real estate and in any career.
Yep.
I have had the pleasure of working with Michael Bessin for 20 years now, who is the chairman and CEO of our company, Besson Partners. And I've certainly really learned the business from him as a mentor, where he's really taught me about brokerage, negotiating strategy, and just being entrepreneurial overall. He is tough but fair, and I've certainly learned a lot from him. There's a lot of terrific folks in our business. I did a short stint at what was Eastern Consolidated in 2008, where I had the pleasure of working on a team with Eric Anton, who is still in the business to this day. Yep. And he is just a top-notch broker and a terrific guy. So certainly someone whom I respect and admire, even despite the fact that he's out of competitor. You know, speaking of Eastern Consolidated, which is no longer in existence, the founder and CEO of that brokerage is the late Peter Hausberg, who was a wonderful leader and really created a terrific breeding ground for a lot of top talent that remains active in the business today. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple others. I think anyone in middle market investment sales, you gotta give props to Bob Knackel. You know, the guy's accomplishments, his knowledge base, his experience, and his passion for the business are inspiring to us all. And I've worked with some wonderful women in the business as well. Certainly worth noting. Early on in the business, I worked with Adelaide Pulcinelli, who's still going in, as well as Deborah Lee Sheraton has been a client, and she was really a pioneer, one of the really first women in commercial real estate brokerage, as well as Dawn Paris, who was married to Peter Hausberg and led Eastern Consolidated. So I certainly hope to have a positive impact on people coming into the business like these folks have had on me.
I love that, Ron. Those are some impressive names. Eric, I definitely barged into his office a couple times trying to sell him Crexie. I had a couple drinks across the street.
Come on, Eric.
Buy Crexie. But no, they're a great group of folks over at the Anton Group. Bob Knackel, obviously, huge leader, wonderful mentor, close and far away for a lot of people in the commercial real estate industry. I love how you speak about the women in commercial real estate as well. Definitely sales is a male-dominated industry plus commercial real estate. So folks like Adelaide, I think she's called the Queen of Skyscrapers or something like that.
That is Darcy Stakem, give Darcy. Credit where credit is due.
Who we also need to get on the podcast as well.
Who is a force to be reckoned with.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I love that all of these people have led to your success, which has been so great. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about some lessons that you learned early on, whether that was from your own experience or working with Michael or any of the folks that you just mentioned? What were some of the lessons that you learned early on that became invaluable to you moving forward?
Sure. One lesson I learned is that you can't always take what your client, seller, tells you at face value. Not to sound cynical or distrustful, but oftentimes, your seller may paint a rosier picture than what is actuality in terms of what is happening with the property or the numbers there. So said another way, do your homework, check the numbers, underwrite conservatively so you don't get burned down the line.
Okay.
Really
good point.
Yeah. I mean, another thing I would say is just in terms of clients and client communication, which is really, in my mind, at the focus center of what we do, sometimes you need to tell clients what they want to hear, and sometimes you need to tell clients what they need to hear, and it's typically in that order.
Okay. I like that. I like both of those points, right? Especially on the sellers, a lot of people have said, you know, and a lot of sellers, if they're owning something, it's like their child, right? You know, and parents, when sometimes they have a baby and they're like, oh, it's so cute. And they come out looking like a little alien, right? And you're like, oh, it's not that cute, right? But we're going to tell them what they want to hear. Congratulations.
All children are beautiful.
Right? Yes. But, you know, then we tell them what they need to hear, which is, you know, the facts and being honest. And I think being transparent is really where, you know, the good brokers become great, right? You know, you want to appease the client, but then also be truthful about what you can do and cannot do with the property and things like that. So absolutely, really, really great lessons for our listeners here. Now, do you have any favorite mistakes, Ron, or moments that course corrected you onto your current path that maybe at the time you didn't recognize was an opportunity?
Favorite mistakes. So I'm actually going to go back in time on that one, way before my, you know, my career days, back to college, when I was hustling to, you know, make some money to live and working in various restaurants. Mm-hmm. So I had worked in this one restaurant owned by a Greek guy, and anyone who's in New York City well knows that that Greek folks own and operate a lot of restaurants here, and they know what the heck they're doing. There were multiple times where I got yelled at for refilling the Parmesan cheese container right by the ice making machine, which at the time didn't seem like anything to me, just a minor detail. I kind of shrugged it off. But in retrospect, I came to understand that this guy knew his business, and there was a method to his madness, and, you know, and a reason for everything. And the reason he was so successful is because he had his eye on every detail down to something that small. So that was a big lesson learned for me, that, you know, that details really matter. Mm-hmm. And that's just something I took with me to this day. I still hear the guy's voice in my head about the cheese over the ice. You know, things have come full circle because I have Greek building owners yelling at me when I cold call them in, you know, in Astoria, Queens. So all respect to the Greek folks in New York. I've learned a lot from them.
I love that. I love that you took us back to those days. I think that working in a service industry, working in a restaurant, I did it, you know, when I was in college and a little bit of summers in between. And it is such an amazing place to learn those kind of skills, people skills, how to interact, how to make sure that your attention to detail is there. So I love to hear that. And I'm sure our listeners do as well. Do you have any daily habits or practices that have become essential to your career? So whether that's commercial real estate focused or otherwise, like meditation or working out or things like that, give us a little insight into your day-to-day.
Yeah, sure. Meditation, working out. I mean, a lot of us do that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm feeling a Matthew McConaughey day one moment coming here. No, just kidding. Yeah, you know, there's one little fun ritual that I've implemented at our office, which we call the daily wake up song. Mm. So, you know, listen, we're in sales. We get a lot of rejection, and motivation is key. So, you know, we like to start the day with a little bit of energy. We're all in, you know, working in an open environment together. So, you know, so the deal is whoever arrives first to the office gets to pick the morning wake up song, and no judgment allowed. Right.
Love that.
And so, you know, we crank up the tunes for a couple of minutes, get our blood going, and and start the day. You know, otherwise, really just on a day-to-day basis, making both the prospecting calls and the follow-up mm-hmm. calls, and you know, and working on a CRM daily is sounds basic, but it's an important practice on a daily basis.
I love that. Early bird gets the worm and gets to pick the wake-up song.
Exactly.
I made my team do jump squats in our morning meeting the other day. So I was like, let's nice. Wake up. Let's do all of it.
Nice.
But the whole thing was about doing one more. So I made them do 10 jump squats. And I said, you guys got to do one more. So if you're planning out your day, as you're saying, doing your cold calls and your prospecting, and you're saying, I'm going to make 25 phone calls or this or that, it was always the prospect of do one more. So I was starting to say this, I made them do 10 jump squats, and I'm happy to say everyone did 11. So I think I got that memo to them.
I feel like you might have read Atomic Habits by James Clear.
I have.
Is that where
Atomic.
You got that from?
I actually
like
got
the,
it.
Just the extra 1%.
Just the one extra thing. So I have read Atomic Habits. Another book that I love is The Power of One More and his podcast by Ed Milet. It's wonderful, but it's all about the habits that you do, the rituals, daily morning, and then just pushing yourself to do one more, making yourself that much better. Mm. Absolutely.
So I'm on James Clear's email list.
Love
so
it.
Every Thursday I get his, you know, his inspirational quotes or whatever,
yep.
and I forward it to our team as Thursday inspiration, and that's become a weekly little mini ritual, I guess you could say.
That's beautiful. I love to hear it. Perfect. So diving into our second topic of the day, moving on to commercial real estate now. I'd love to know more about your work at Besson Partners and the success that you've created with your team there. So for context for some of our listeners that might not know, what is Besson Partners and what sets it apart from other brokerage firms?
Sure. So Besson Partners is really a middle market investment sales brokerage firm that does offer several other service lines. The company was founded in 1988 in New York City by Michael Besson, who remains the chairman and CEO. And we have transacted on sales ranging from $1 million to $300 million at the high end of the range. And what we've sold the most of has tended to be multifamily, mixed-use properties, also development sites, some retail properties, and hotels. We had previously sold, a handful of hotels. And in recent times, we actually diversified a little bit to add a hotel advisory group, which coming out of the pandemic is now really really gaining some wonderful momentum. We've typically been New York City centric, and sure. in recent times we have expanded our geographic reach a bit out of our New York City office. We've sold some properties in Texas, Virginia, Connecticut, and New Jersey, and we've expanded a bit in that regard. And also, we do have a very competent property management division called New York City Management, which oversees about 2,500 residential units in New York City. And within that division, there's also a distressed asset advisory group, which manages properties in the foreclosure process for lenders and receivers. So, you know, I would say that that's a differentiator
sure.
For us versus other investment sales firms of our size. We really do have some in-house expertise that we can pull from.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, we do actually have in-house counsel, which does come in handy mm-hmm. From time to time in this tough business that we're in. So, I would say that we have some resources and tacit knowledge that, mm-hmm. that other shops our size don't have.
For sure. Absolutely. Thanks for that overview, and definitely a lot of differentiators there. So thanks for sharing. I'd love to dive into how you built your team and established your track record for excellence. So from a branding and philosophy perspective, how do you differentiate yourself and your team, and how do you provide the most value to your clients?
Mm-hmm. So I'd start off by saying it's really one person at a time. We're a boutique shop. You know, and so every desk and every person matters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now more than ever, we have become more selective about who we bring on board.
Sure.
You know, and I would say that we really differentiate ourselves on a high level of service and engagement. You know, when you hire us, we are really going to dig in and focus on your situation and, you know, and working towards a successful outcome. You know, we've heard horror stories of people who hire brokers and then never hear from them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's not how we operate.
Mm-hmm.
We really want to achieve our clients' objectives at the center of everything. And, you know, we stay the course to ensure that we do the best possible job that we can.
I love that. So what I'm hearing too, just from the training aspect, being very specific about that, obviously you're hiring and mentoring and things like that. You only have so much time that you can spread across so many different people. So making sure that you're hiring the right type of candidate for the brokerage position, and then also so that you can service that to your clients, right? Making sure that the broker is then understanding the client and doing their due diligence and really understanding the pain, the problem of their situation, and then helping them to the best of their ability. So I love that. Absolutely, Ron. Great ethos to build the brand on. So as a broker and a team leader, how do you balance both sides of that equation, right? I'm sure it's difficult from a time management perspective, learning how to delegate. Any strategies that you can share to our listeners about that?
That's a good question. I am effectively a player coach, mm-hmm. in my role.
Sure.
So I am highly sensitive to ensuring that I'm never competing with, mm-hmm. with anyone on my team. If anything, I do everything I can to help people along and put them on my listings and have them work with me when those opportunities present themselves.
Sure.
You know, and it really just, it does come down to time management and effectively knowing when to focus on what, right? So, you know, revenue generating activity is always the first order of business,
right.
Naturally. And, you know, that is certainly the focus and objective that, you know, I'm working towards helping everyone on my team achieve.
I love that point. The first one, you know, obviously being a player coach is probably difficult. And, you know, sometimes from the management perspective, you can say, hey, make more calls, do this, do that. But I love embodying, you know, I work for you, we work together type of scenario. So especially when you have to manage your own book and your own listings and things, plus help everyone out. So I love that you're talking about that aspect of it. So Ron, balancing both sides, obviously pretty difficult. How do you specifically come up with strategies or what works for you on time management or learning how to delegate or anything there?
Hmm. Well, everybody's important, right?
Mm-hmm.
Clients first, team also first, right?
Yep.
And everybody's issue is equally important.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's never easy. You know, after some time and experience in the role, you just develop a little sense of, you know, of what to prioritize on.
Sure.
And you know, usually my filter is clients come first. You know, that said, then you get into things like just, you know, with brokerage, like all we have is our time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And our success is our earnings are largely success based.
Sure.
Right. So we have to be judicious about how we use our time. You know, so really the first thing that we frequently talk about is seller motivation. Do we have a real seller? Because that is first and foremost question number one. And, you know, if an answer is not a resounding yes, then nothing else really matters at the end of the
mm-hmm.
day, right? I don't care if it's $1 million transaction or $100 million transaction. You know, we don't get paid if it doesn't close. Almost doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
So that's critical. And guess what? It's not always readily apparent either.
Yep.
You know, sometimes people will sign an exclusive agreement, hire us, we go through the motions, and they're still not a real seller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's pretty amazing. You know, and then we talk about clients and, you know, and communication with clients, right? And it's sort of, you know, knowing when to be on them and knowing when to leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, there's certain times you gotta push, and other times you gotta hang back a little bit.
Sure.
And let things progress. And you know, certainly last but not least, I mean, generally speaking, I just pick my spots of where I can be of most value. You know, an example of that is sometimes I'll say to, you know, to newer brokers, you know, if possible, take me on the second meeting versus the first meeting, because more often than not, the first meeting with a prospect can be hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
But the second meeting is usually a little more qualified, and that's where I can certainly add more value.
Sure.
in securing the assignment with,
yep,
with a team member.
Yep, absolutely. I think right there you hit the nail on the head, is just picking where you can be of most valuable, or of most value, and then making sure you're doing that with the team as well as with the client, and understanding what is going to transact, what is going to be the most helpful, and then knowing your strengths. And then if it's not something there, you know, maybe handing it off to someone else at that point. So I love that, Ron. Thank you for sharing. In terms of how you built your team, how do you make sure each new addition to the team that you bring on embraces the Best in Partners culture?
Yeah, so that's important.
Mm-hmm.
I place a high value on culture,
mm-hmm,
right? Because we spend a lot of our time and waking hours there, and I want it to be fun, collegial, and professional,
mm-hmm,
and client-focused.
Yep.
So, you know, I spend a lot of time with individual team members, going through pipeline and diagnosing issues and problem solving, and you know, we spend time together as a group too to build some cohesion amongst the team. You know, we try to get out and do fun things together.
Mm-hmm.
One of the recent event, we took the group up to the Edge in Hudson Yards, for an evening, and then had some tapas at Little Spain for dinner afterwards, which was a lovely time. And so, you know, we do try to take time to do those sorts of things. And just otherwise, I really do try to lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
With particularly with the newer brokers, just specifically in terms of how I communicate with clients and, you know, and run a process.
Sure. I think that you mentioned two really important things. The first one, just making sure to have fun with your team and kind of genuinely like each other. I got a tip, and it was, before you start to join a company, will you go outside of work with this team and with these people? Right? One of my mentors said, there's three things that you have to look at when joining a company. First is team, second is team, and third is product, right? So team is hugely important. So it's really, really vital, especially in this industry where there's so many ups and downs and you are working hard, just to remember to celebrate those small wins and have fun and things like that. So
totally.
Couldn't be more true.
Celebrate success and learn from mistakes. I mean,
mm-hmm,
you know, there's a lot of landmines and pitfalls. I don't get upset with anybody if they make mistakes, unless they're disrespectful to a client. That's
mm-hmm,
that's a line that that we don't cross. But
sure,
you know, but otherwise, I mean, you know, it's all, chalk it all up to learning, and there's no dumb questions.
Yes.
And my door is open, and I'm here to help you. And you know, to your point, you know, sometimes I will at least think to myself, is this someone that I'd want to have a beer with?
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
And if not, I mean, we're in sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
People have to like you.
Yeah, right?
Likeability is, you know, is something you can't teach people.
I was just thinking that as you said it. Took the words right out of my mouth.
So that's important.
It really is. And then the second point that you were saying is, you know, with clients and process and making sure that you do that. So transitioning into my next question is, how do you train new brokers and continue to develop the team? Do you have processes in place? And you mentioned pipeline and making sure that you're sitting down with them one-on-one. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. So we developed a training program modestly called BEST, which is short for Broker Excellence Standards Training.
Amazing.
And, you know, as a company that has been in business over 30 plus years, you know, there's a lot of tacit knowledge and a lot of training materials that we have developed and grown over the course of time. To, you know, to the extent where, you know, we have enough training presentations to give one every single week of the year. Mm-hmm. So we have a pretty extensive training library on a vast range of topics, brokerage fundamentals, real estate specifics, and, you know, and what have you. You know, so look, I mean, we're not a corporate behemoth. We don't have people in, you know, informal training for 3 months per se. And, you know, and after a while I find people's eyes tend to glaze over anyway. And
sure.
It's like, how much stuff can you jam into someone's
right,
head?
Right.
So typically, you know, it looks like a 2 week kind of onboarding and basic training period, mm-hmm. when new brokers come to our shop, where we cover like all the fundamentals. And, you know, and certainly we go through some mock scenarios of calls and pitches, mm-hmm. and discussions to prepare for those things. And, you know, and then the training wheels come off, mm-hmm. and, you know, and people start prospecting. And, you know, and then from there, there's ongoing, like, weekly training topics and guest speakers we bring in to provide expertise on various topics. And then really just the day-to-day coaching and mentoring and, you know, and guidance. And, you know, and I'm very hands-on with people. You know, my attitude is in some ways, I work for you guys. So, mm-hmm. you know, deploy me to help when you need me.
Right.
So I do hop on calls with clients or prospects sometimes. I do go on meetings to help pitch and secure business and then help execute along the way. And, you know, frankly, that's really how you learn in this business, is by doing it.
Yep. I was just thinking that. So I had been recently looking into adult learning strategies and what's the best way to, you know, have people learn a new skill, especially as an adult, right? We're not in the classroom. And I think it was a very different learning style, right? Most people learn by doing. I think that, you know, 70% was learning by actually doing and getting right in there. 20%, I think, was learning by others. So maybe seeing other colleagues' success or maybe their pitfalls and kind of learning what to do or what not to do. And 10% was in that classroom training. So I love that you guys are doing more of a shorter kind of in-classroom training and then getting them out on the floor and kind of doing it with you. And then also, you know, just getting their feet wet and kind of jumping right in and allowing them to do that. So that's awesome of a process. I like the BEST model. So transitioning to our third topic, Ron, we're going to zoom out a little bit more broadly. I'd love to ask some overview questions of your thoughts on the current state of the market. So what is your 37,000 feet overview of the current market happenings? What shifts are most worthy of our attention, and what is just fluff?
So just for perspective, I mean, I'll speak on market dynamics here in New York City, because
sure.
that's where I'm based.
Sure.
You might have a national audience, but so it's admittedly a challenging time for commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. Overall, and New York City does have its own unique set of challenges. You know, just big picture, New York City commercial property sales in the first half of 2023, from a dollar volume standpoint, was about $6 billion. And for perspective, compared to the first half of 2022, it was about $12 billion. So it's down 50%. For the first half of this year, and that is arguably largely due to the interest rate environment, mm-hmm. that we're living in. You know, that's big picture. Not to be not to be negative, but we are living in the aftermath of what have some referred to as three black swan events, right? So number one, from a New York City standpoint, was the HSTPA legislation in 2019 that really limited ability to raise rents on rent-stabilized apartments in New York City, which there are, I believe, like 900,000 or so in total. That was a game changer for commercial property sales in New York City. The second, obviously, was a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. Who could have predicted that? Answer, Bill Gates, but I don't know about anybody else, okay? And the third, as I just alluded to, was just 11 consecutive interest rate hikes that have effectively doubled cost of capital in the past 18 months or so.
Right.
People's heads are spinning and they're really, don't know whether to hold them or to fold them, so to speak. We did see a little bit of an uptick this year in commercial sales in New York City, going from the first quarter to the second quarter, which is somewhat encouraging. But if you annualize it, it looks like we're on track to hit somewhere between $10 and $12 billion of total sales in New York City this year, which would be down from 2022. So it's a little tough right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what are your thoughts on specific asset classes? So given the diversity of the segments that Bessin works in, what are specific asset classes? What are your thoughts? Any doing better or worse than one another? Give us a little bit of insight there.
Sure. So this is a big answer.
Yep. Give us all the goods.
All right. So we'll start with multifamily, which is from quantitatively the largest stock of building inventory in New York City, and historically what our company Bessin Partners has sold the most of, right? As a direct result of HSTPA, there's been measurable capital flight out of New York City. Mm-hmm. Into multifamily in other places around the country, particularly the Sun Belt and lower regulation states like Texas and Florida, where the tables turned, and at one point cap rates were as low as 3 to 4 in those places, which is always what it was in New York City, right? So traditional New York City multifamily investors who are always very New York City centric have broadened their acquisition criteria, both geographically and by asset type. So that's been a bit of a sea change in the marketplace in the past number of years. What is selling the most in recent times has tended to be smaller buildings meaning fewer than 6 units that fly under the radar of rent stabilization to avoid that. Particularly in places like North Brooklyn, where there's a lot of value add investors who are able to take under market, free market rents and bump them up a good 30% and execute that business plan. Mm-hmm. So that has been what has been in highest demand in recent times. Talk industrial for a second, right? So, admittedly, not really my core competency. However, just if we're talking about asset classes, industrial has arguably been the hottest asset class for the past 5 to 8 years, and is just now showing some signs of cooling off. There's some sub-segments in there that have really been high growth, last mile logistics, self storage, IOS. Industrial outdoor storage, covered land play. So that's been interesting. And just as a side note, we actually sold the largest industrial property Bessin has done in the spring of this year, which was a 725,000 square foot multi-tenanted property in Paterson, New Jersey, for $65.5 million.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was a nice one. Office, wah wah. Office is, you know, is really highest on the radar now, just in terms of challenges, right? The current vacancy rate in office in New York City is 17%, mm-hmm. which equates to about 75 million square feet of empty offices, which is the equivalent of filling 16 Empire State Buildings, just for perspective. I am personally not a big fan of working from home, although there clearly is a paradigm shift where that is likely here to stay, or certainly at least hybrid models, which mm-hmm. are forcing employers to reduce their footprints and cut back on office space. Unfortunately, this sector is probably going to be challenged for the foreseeable future. But look, that said, just this morning I read about a trade in New York City of a 113,000 square foot Class B office building on West 32nd Street, K-Town, to a Korean purchaser, actually, for $37 million, which I believe worked out to $370 per square foot delivered vacant. So, you know, I mean, it's certainly not dead. Right. New York City will keep going, mm-hmm. but office is tough right now. Talk about hotel mm-hmm. for a second. Hotel is back from the dead from the pandemic. It was arguably the hardest hit sector there. I mean, everyone stayed home. Mm-hmm. Nobody traveled. So yep. Hotels really felt it. Mm-hmm. Hotels arguably are the Cinderella story of the moment. Mm-hmm. Travel and tourism is up, and yep. occupancy thus far this year in New York City is up to 87%. Mm-hmm. Room revenues have increased. We now have this interesting dynamic of the city renting out thousands of rooms to house asylum seekers. Mm-hmm. So, all the migrants coming to New York, coupled with, a homelessness issue, has in recent times been a bit of a boon for the hotel industry. One interesting kind of yin and yang dynamic that we're finding is valuation is a little tricky right now, because hotel clients are saying to us, well, look, my room revenues are higher than even 2019. Therefore, my property is worth more. But you got interest rates at 7-8%. Mm-hmm. So, that is an opposing force putting downward pressure on pricing.
Sure.
So it gets a little hard to reconcile valuation in that discussion.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for that overview. That was so insightful. I learned a ton. I would definitely agree. It was very hard for me even to find a hotel here in New York City. Everything was booked up.
Expensive too, right?
Very expensive. Yeah. I mean, every airport that I go to, everyone is bustling. There's a ton of people. So that is definitely back up, I will say. What are some of maybe your controversial thoughts or surprising thoughts about the current market happenings that you'd like to share? I know we don't have a crystal ball, but anything controversial or surprising on the current market in your perspective?
Yeah. Well, good segue question, because, I was kind of struggling to think about an answer to this, and then it hit me, which is that, there is a faction of New Yorkers who are tickled pink about the migrant crisis. And I know that sounds weird and terrible. These are human beings, and of course, as New Yorkers, we want to help people. But just from a real estate standpoint, as I alluded to before, owners and operators of economy and limited service mm-hmm. hotels are making money hand over fist right now, housing migrants coming into New York City. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, you have a hotel with 150 rooms at a contracted rate of $110 per bed per night per person, with 100% occupancy guarantee. Do the math. That adds up to millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. a lot of these owners have actually recouped their losses from the pandemic and then some.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a quasi-controversial thing to say, but it is fact. And it is an interesting dynamic post-pandemic that is worth noting.
Absolutely. No, I think that's great. So another thing, based on what you said, and this is just kind of a thrown in the wind question, but some of the office buildings, I've been seeing some people that are purchasing them and then getting creative with repurposing them into either some multifamilies or potentially even, do you think it would be like a hotel? What are your thoughts on that? Is that a possibility for some buyers or anything that you've suggested or kind of seen?
Ashley, we're going off script now, but
I can
take the question. I can do it. So you know, the answer is yes. That is something that is certainly been discussed frequently. Adaptive reuse and mm-hmm. You know, conversions from hotel to largely residential, because
sure.
you know, we have a supply constraint in residential and, mm-hmm. and certainly in affordable housing in New York City. And, you know, there are a few noteworthy projects that, you know, that are occurring. You know, one downtown, I believe, on Maiden Lane, you know, of some size and scale. But, you know, the practical reality is that it's a heavy lift.
Sure.
You know, and the asset and the structure do have to lend itself to doing that. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, if you have a mid-block building or perhaps a block-through building, it is hard to do that from a light and air standpoint because,
okay.
you know, you only have light and air
mm-hmm.
on two sides.
Yep.
And particularly if you have a very deep building, it can get dark and it doesn't
mm-hmm.
lend itself too well to that.
Sure.
But, you know, certainly, you know, people are tuned into that and looking for those opportunities. But, you know, the cost basis has to work in that equation as well.
Sure. Based on your expertise, I had to ask when we were going over the office overview. So thank you for answering that question. It was on top of my mind, and I'm sure it would be for our listeners as well. So thanks, Ron.
My pleasure.
Going after, you know, kind of shifting into our second question on this topic, how are some of these assets that you've spoken about being affected by current macroeconomic factors? I know we were discussing inflation and rising interest rates, higher insurance costs. What is being affected the most and how so?
Well, I mean, right now, I think what is top of everyone's mind is interest rates.
Yep.
Right? And the answer is that each and every one of those factors that you described is putting downward pressure on pricing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plain and simple. Inflation is easing up, and it seems like talks of an impending recession are dwindling, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, interest rates are now in and around 7%. Give or take, and so you know, they've more than doubled in the past 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I are thankfully both too young to, you know, to talk about the 80s, really, where interest rates were in the teens.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we've been spoiled by
sure.
You know, historically low interest rate environment, as mm-hmm. in most people, you know, in the industry in this day and age.
Right.
But you know, that's a big factor. I'm also hearing from clients that insurance premiums have skyrocketed
mm-hmm.
two to three times. And, you know, and that cuts into net operating income, which subsequently
right.
hurts valuations.
Right.
Right. So consequently, I mean, we are seeing properties trade in a 7 cap range in New York City now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that would be buildings that are predominantly rent stabilized mm-hmm. assets, or also perhaps retail commercial properties in the boroughs with non-credit tenants.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thanks for that overview. So if you were to give our listeners kind of your short-term and long-term outlook for the New York City market, what would it be and why do you think that?
So my short-term outlook is that sales will be flat to marginally increased in the next 6 to 12 months. Right. I mean, we end up at 10 to 12 billion in aggregate dollar volume in sales in New York City for commercial property in 2023. I would love to predict a 20% to 30% increase in that mm-hmm. in that volume in 2024.
Sure.
However, bear in mind that it's going to be an election year mm-hmm. and that breeds uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And when there's uncertainty, people tend to hold steady and not do anything. So, you know, that's a key consideration. You know, one thing that really does need to change here somehow, some way, is there needs to be some loosening of regulations in New York City. And, you know, and obviously I'm alluding to rent regulations. Mm-hmm. You know, and other tax incentives to build more sorely needed housing. You know, unfortunately, I guess to state a cliche, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and the enactment of these rent regulations, you know, have resulted in something counterintuitive, which is you know, more housing taken out of supply. Because unfortunately, you know, the profit potential is taken out of the equation for a landlord where they're disincentivized to invest into property improvements to raise rents. So there's negative return mm-hmm. on their capital. So that's creating a really challenging dynamic here in New York City, mm-hmm. and it's also driving defaults and insolvency mm-hmm. amongst landlords, which is frankly creating a precarious situation here.
Sure, absolutely. And you kind of alluded to, you know, this next question, but as we are heading into 2024, what, in addition to election year and things that needed to be changed in terms of regulations, what are some primary concerns or considerations when you're advising clients through the current economic times? Mm-hmm. So long-term upsides, current obstacles. I know we kind of touched on some of these, but go a little bit deeper for us.
I will. But if I may, I do want to add a little addendum to my last point,
sure.
just about the outlook. And that is to say, you know, as far as New York City goes, I'm certainly bullish long-term mm-hmm. for the city. Obviously, we have some serious challenges and headwinds that we're dealing with at present. But New York City has always been incredibly resilient.
Yep.
It is a wonderful ecosystem here, and people from around the world come here for, you know, for a lot of reasons.
Yep.
So, you know, I think long term there's always going to be capital appreciation. So I do want to say that as a, you know, as a proud native New Yorker as well.
Absolutely. So, I no longer live in New York City, but I have for 5 years and now I'm an LA native. Don't hold that against me either, but
70 and sunny. I hear you.
But at the same time, it's New York or nowhere for me. So I completely agree with that. New York is one of the most resilient cities and it definitely will, you know, go through its challenges, but come out on the other side. Absolutely.
Yeah.
One way or another.
Yeah. So, I mean, so your next question had a few facets to it.
Sure.
I guess one is, you know, first to just give you a philosophical answer of like, you know, how to guide or advise clients in through murky waters, right?
Yep.
And to give you a philosophical answer to that, you know, my attitude is always you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Sure.
Right? So, you know, it is a challenging time that's creating uncertainty. And to me, my primary consideration is always like, what are my clients' objectives and how can we be instrumental in achieving those?
Yep.
And, you know, sometimes the answer is just standing down and doing nothing. And, you know, we have to respect that. You know, long-term upside, you know, I think is something that you've inquired about. And, you know, and that really comes down to basis and buying right, period, no matter where you're buying or what asset you're buying. You know, then we're going to talk about current obstacles, and the list is long, right? there's interest rates, there's onerous legislation in place, there's properties underwater with their debt, there's a disconnect on pricing, which is just creating a general malaise in the market. You know, with all that said, there's always smart money out there that finds opportunities to generate returns. You know, who knows? Maybe we'll see funds emerge that buy thousands of rent-stabilized units at a $100,000 a door basis and double their money in a 5-year holding period. Or maybe there will be a contrarian office fund who buys in at $250 a foot under replacement costs and is patient capital and banks on the fact that, not the fact, but the opinion that, maybe people get sick and tired of working from home in their sweatpants and want to go into an office more frequently.
Sure.
So time will tell.
Absolutely. And that was a lot of good advice, a lot of good predictions and kind of thoughts there. Do you have any general advice for players in this space?
Yes, I do. And I'll try to speak in bullet points here, okay?
Thank you.
One, focus on what is in the realm of your control, all right? And speaking in broad brushstrokes here, that could apply to a lot of different market participants.
For sure.
Get used to interest rates. They're gonna stay where they are for a while, or give or take. Underwrite conservatively, right? If you're not realistic on pricing expectations, you're probably not gonna sell right now. And last and probably most importantly, relationships are everything.
Yes.
So, you know, if it's you're a broker, you're a principal, you're an attorney, you're an accountant, a service provider, relationships matter.
Absolutely. Wow. Such good advice, Ron. I appreciate all of that. And I'm sure our listeners do as well. Fourth topic. So we are going to go into some rapid fire questions. So given your specialized background and expertise, our listeners definitely want to know this. So first and foremost, if you were given $50 million today and had to invest it immediately, what would your go-to asset type and location be and why?
Let's see. Can I say oceanfront in Bridgehampton?
Same.
or Malibu in your case, right? half kidding aside, because you're asking about investment properties, right? And by the way, this is an inherently biased question because, of course, like, you know, the broker that you're asking is going to say, well, you know, what I'm selling.
Right.
But I'm going to try not to do that and give you an honest answer. I would try to spread it across a few things.
Sure.
Starting with, I would probably acquire several all free market, multifamily or mixed use buildings in prime Manhattan and North Brooklyn, preferably tax class 2A or 2B to put a ceiling on the amount of tax increases you could get there. Secondly, I don't know, I might buy a little boutique hotel in the Miami area, or an emerging city in Florida. And last, but not least, and frankly, the unsung hero of commercial real estate, I would probably pick up a couple of triple net lease type assets with credit rated tenants and corporate guarantees, just for a nice safe return to sleep at night and not have to do anything.
There you go. Now we have our plan for success. Someone give us
about good,
$50
right?
million, please.
Yeah,
it sounds great.
Good?
It sounds great.
Or screw it all, just oceanfront in Bridgehampton.
There we go. Second question. What is your favorite tool or software that you use on the job? And I promise this is not a trick question. You don't have to say Crexy.
Do we think that's a biased question there? Just a little bit? Well, besides Crexy, which obviously we do use, otherwise I wouldn't be sitting here, right?
Sure.
I would say we have a CRM solution called Zoho that I absolutely love and am a big fan of. And, big believer in CRMs, you got to stay organized, is critical. And we've cycled through several of them through the course of time at Bessin, and this is by and far my favorite. Very user-friendly. It has a suite of apps to use, apps for your phone, I like it a lot.
Absolutely. I mean, can't tell you, you've said it multiple times, relationships in this industry are key in life, everything like that, and helping, you stay organized, keeping all of your contacts in one place, definitely hugely beneficial. And then third rapid fire question, last but certainly not least, what is the most common misconception about your job or your industry?
That's easy. People think brokerage is easy money, just like sign up and we just put it out there, maybe throw a sign on the building or whatever and it sells itself and a piece of cake, right? And, why do these people, make so much money and get handed such big checks? And, sorry to say, the reality is that there's a heck of a lot of dead deals and disappointment and sweat equity along the way to get to one of those nice commission checks.
For sure. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in commercial real estate and a lot of things that you don't see behind the scenes, which is why, to our points in the beginning, building that culture and building those mentors and building the team and the training and the people that you surround yourself that, will get you out of those tough times and help you is really, really important. So having a company culture like Bessin Partners is awesome for those downtimes, right? Well, thank you so much. Last thing before we let you go here for our listeners, any parting words that you'd like to share with our audience?
Sure. I will graciously take the opportunity to say to anyone who's actually listened to me wax poetic here, if you liked what you heard today, please consider hiring Bessin Partners to sell your commercial real estate and or consider talking to me about joining our team.
Absolutely. I love it. Well, thank you, Ron, so much for joining us and sharing your insights. We know that you're super busy, so we genuinely appreciate the time for you to take sitting down with us here today. If our listeners want to get in touch, join the team, sell, list deals with you, how do we get in touch?
Very easy. You can look at our website, Bessin Partners, where you'll find my contact information. Certainly also look at our company LinkedIn page. And we have an Instagram feed as well that shows our deals as well as gives you a little glimpse into our company culture.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure not to miss the next one. Visit go.crexy.com/podcast and sign up to get the very next episode delivered straight to your inbox. You can also subscribe to the Crexy Podcast on your favorite podcast app or check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/Crexy for video recordings of each episode. Goodbye, stay well, and we'll see you next time.